Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua.
We're back. So I see that that after my 1 week sabbatical, the Imagine MKE didn't burn down. You guys kept the lights on and kept everything moving.
David took a much needed 1 week break, which was pretty savvy. He's burning his PTO off before it turns over again. So pro move. That's what pros do.
They
do.
This is what happens after you realize after your 1 year anniversary that you've lost three quarters of your PTO or whatever it was that you can't carry over.
Got to use it because you can't do it. God, I live nonprofit life. Yes. So welcome back. You know what I did do that nobody else noticed is I did risky business dance style while you were gone.
Yeah, you did.
I wore an Oxford and I wore boxers and I danced to Old Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger. In the office, which is my office, so I guess it's not technically.
It's actually your house, right?
So it's actually my house. So yeah, I did dance, but I did that in tribute to you not being there. I did dance, and I juggled. Imagine MKE's diamond. Apparently, we have this big crystal.
Our big diamond. That's right.
Yeah, with this big crystal thing that you did. So
well, we do have that. Don't forget, we do have that David Najib Kassir sculpture.
We have a David Najib Kassir sculpture.
that is listed for $25,000. That was made the day before the COVID thing blew up. So any interested buyers, hit us up at pod@imaginemke.org.
So apologies to our under 30 listeners. I made a reference to Tom Cruise in Risky Business. So that's it. The movie Risky Business, 1983. Anyways, we're back. You know how else we're back, David? Why it's fall? Because actually NFL started before anybody knew about it. It just sort of happened.
So it just sort of happened. That was crazy. Yeah.
Like a pop-up. It was like a pop-up. Like
a pop-up league. A pop-up billion-dollar league.
A pop-up billion-dollar league with dozens of edifices that was built to it. It's a pop-up. Oh, it just started. Hi there. Hi, everybody.
You know, the night game last night, that new stadium, it felt like it popped up out of nowhere, right? Like it felt like we went into COVID and that SoFi Stadium wasn't there. And then suddenly it's just like this incredible new stadium out in L.A. Crazy.
$5 billion? That's insane.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm also chirping a little bit because my Chicago Bears are 1-0 and your San Francisco 49ers are 0-1.
So. I don't need to talk about like what travails I went through to try to watch that game yesterday. and all that, and all I got was a 27-24 loss or whatever it was. God darn it.
This is the content that our loyal listeners care about. That being said, welcome to another edition of Imagine This Podcast. A very special episode, one might say, listed in the TV Guide. Again, for our under 30 listeners, TV Guide was a magazine you bought to tell you what was on TV that week. And if we were a TV show, we'd tell you that our guest coming up later is the Secretary of the Department of Administration, Joel Brennan, arguably one of our biggest gets from a government standpoint.
Yeah, super excited to have him on. And, a couple of weeks ago, Mac sort of floated the idea of getting Joel Brennan on to talk about, you know, just like government stuff. And he was sort of talking very like loosely about the secretary of the Department of Administration, you know, a cabinet level position. And it's like, how are we going to do that? And Mac is like, I know a guy. So Mac, why don't you tell us about the guy you know, i.e. yourself?
So the story is Joel Brennan, Department of Administration, that is the department that's administering the $5 million Arts and Culture Grant, relief grant. So that's why it's on our podcast. It's like, oh, this is our work. We should talk about what does it take? You know, what is this grant about? What does it mean? This is a big, important investment on the state at a critical time. So yeah, that'd make it pod worthy. And so we figured let's get the head of the DOA to be on the pod. And so the way I know Joel Brennan is that when I moved here 10 years ago to Milwaukee, I moved to Sherwood, made friends with some neighbors. And so we like playing basketball. I knew a bunch of dads or a bunch of people my age at that time in our 30s were like, oh, let's play basketball. And so we would, I would rent the high school, Sherwood High School. You can rent it for like $100. So you divvy that among 15 people. It's pretty reasonable, right? And then after a while, we're like, oh, we should play in the over 35 league. So I organize, I call it New Jack Hustlers, named after the iced tea song for New Jack City. Yes, this is true. After that, that's our theme song. We don't play the song New Jack Hustlers.
Wait, it's not on the boombox? Like,
it's not on the boombox. I don't carry a boombox in the court. But I named the team after that. Just, I got to give a time and place of the age of us, right? Just give you perspective of who we are. But it's comprised of all the guys that we play pickup with on Thursday night. And it was this over that were over 35, right? And so one of the players in this league was Joel Brennan, right? He's the one who would play with us, and I picked him up. Thanks to my buddy Andy, who said, oh, my buddy Joel can play. And so for about a few years, every Thursday night, I would just play ball with Joel. And granted, in the league runs, David, for those who care, which is very few, but for you that care, the league runs from October, or did run before COVID, October to February. But then from February for the rest of the year, I would run pickup. So really, I would just have Thursday nights at Shorewood High School. It just, you know, it was a league for some of the time. And Joel was on our league.
Okay. And so a brief side, the David sidelight is that every now, since Mac and I met, every few Wednesdays or every few Tuesdays, Mac would be like, hey, I need a sub. Do you want to come up to play basketball with us?
You want to play? Yeah. I have you on the roster. Like, I've got your name rostered, your birth date, your address. It's filed with the Sherwood Recreational Department. Because you would be legit. You're rostered. You'd be ready to play. Like, you'd be right. Like, all right, no, he's in, right?
How many times have I showed up?
None. Zero. None.
Okay. That's right. So,
zero. Okay. Just want to make sure you understand. Yeah. So that being said, right? So through public allies, connections, right? I've played. And, you know, and I told the people that played, David's like, how did, so anyways, so let me first start with Joel. Joel, for 3 years, is this guy who's like really good wing player. You know, he's a little bit older than me, but like, he's crafty. Like, he's very efficient in his movement, incredibly modest. Like, when he lights it up, he can light it up. So he's a starter for me, but he's also a guy like my role, David, on the team. I don't even play in the league. I don't want to say I coach. I manage minutes. Like, I'm the objective person on the side. It's like, David, you should sit. Let's bring in this guy, right? So I manage minutes, and I make it easier so people know they can take themselves off. So that's my role. So people call me coach. I'm not coach. I don't, like, when there's timeouts, I'm not running plays. I'm like, does everybody have the water they need? Like, I'm just asking, are you okay? All right, fine. But otherwise, I do rotate people in and out. And Joel's super amenable to being subbed out. You know, he's like, or he's even like, hey, I don't have it tonight. So anyway, so then I'm like taking my kids to Discovery World a few years after, you know, 3 years into this. And I saw Joel at Discovery World. And I saw him like in a suit. And I was like, hey, Joel, what's up, man? He's like, hey, Matt, what's up? What's going on? And, you know, we have this small talk. And I'm like, oh, well, it's good to see you. It's like, wow, you're really dressed up for Discovery World. And he kind of like chuckled a little bit. He's like, well, you know. He didn't make any comments. He's like, oh, well, you know, shrug. And then we walked, and I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. And I literally looked on the wall, and I saw his picture on the wall at Discovery World, like the CEO. And it didn't hit me. I'm like, oh, you're that Joel Brennan. You're like the CEO of Discovery World. Like, I'm there with my little Johnson Control, like, pterodactyl in my hand. And I got, like, I was at the Kohl's Design Center with, like, made my little origami house. I must look like big as idiot to him. So anyway, so there you go, right? So that's how – I'm like, oh, Joel's the head of CEO of Discovery. That's cool. That's neat. And then a few years later, after Governor Evers gets elected, you know, I read the paper and saw that
some guy named Joel Brennan gets
Joel Brennan tapped for department, right? The DOA. So then it's sort of serendipity would happen, you know, as this grant is out. I gave him Sherwood. My daughter, my oldest daughter, plays softball in the Sherwood Girls Softball League, and his daughter played in the same league, and they were actually they would play each other. So I would just. I saw him like a month ago. We were standing on the side, masked, socially distanced, and talking. And I said, hey, would you like to come on the podcast to talk about this upcoming grant? You know, and he was like, I actually said, can someone from your office come? And then he later emailed saying, well, I don't want to disappoint you, but I'd be happy to do the pod. I'm like, oh, all right then. So that's how we got Joel Brennan to come on the pod. But it just, I don't know, you know, we can edit this out later if you want, but like, other people that have played, and now in hindsight, it's like Wes Tank, Arthur Ersink, Wisconsin foodie, George Brigar, owner, founder of Company Brewing in River West, David Crowley and Jonathan Brostoff have played consistently with us. Like, it is this, like, when I look back and see all the list of different people who played in this and who's invited who, I think Brostoff once invited one of his Republican colleagues as just sort of like a currying favor kind of thing. Like, hey, let's just play ball together. Like, that Thursday night game has had a fascinating nexus.
So you look at that list of folks, right? And then you, right? Do you ever get that moment of like, well, who's the person that doesn't belong here?
I just sort of look at it like, you know, in Hollywood, there's like one, like, it's like, oh, we got together to play Pictionary, like Ashton right. Kutcher and all these people get, and like the key organizer isn't like the most famous person. It's just some person, like actor's actor, or like right. some friend, like right. they all know.
Yeah.
That's me. That's me in the Wisconsin League. I'm not like the most highly acclaimed or positioned. I just happen to be the guy who hosts a Thursday night basketball game. And that's who comes out. So yeah. So that's the story of how we got Joel Brennan to come on the pod.
My guess though is that if he had not been the best wing player, the craftiest wing player in the Thursday night game, that even if we had asked,
I think you would have been amenable.
You would have sent somebody.
You would have sent his intern to come see us. Well, it's a credit because it's like I will say this. It, to me, it's a testament to who he is as a person that like he doesn't bring those errors at all to the basketball. He just shows up as himself, and he's a really just tough competitor and a nice guy, super humble. And it took me like literally to go to his place of business to find out that he's been doing these really fascinating roles. So as we pivot to our guest, want to make sure you understand his bona fides, so you don't know him just as, you know, my wingman, my three.
The craftiest wing.
The craftiest wing for the New Jack Hustlers, a team that's perennially finished fourth place in this league of eight teams. Prior to leading Discovery World, he served as the head of Milwaukee's Redevelopment Authority, where he worked on real estate development and the large-scale economic development projects. Such as the Menominee Valley redevelopment and the relocation of manpower to downtown Milwaukee. He also served as a vice president of development and government affairs for the Greater Milwaukee Convention and Visitors Bureau, now known as Visit Milwaukee. He also did some time at Miller Brewing Company, you know, a small mom and pop shop, did government relations there. So graduate of Marquette University, this guy is Milwaukee through and through. And he is our guest today to talk more about not just this grant, but also the role of arts and culture in a vibrant Wisconsin and his unique experience, which shaped him as a champion for arts and culture.
It's a wrap. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, black fish, blue fish, old fish, new fish. This one has a little star. This one has
We are excited to welcome, this is the last time I'll use this title, Secretary Joel Brennan of the Department of Administration. Welcome to the pod. Secretary Brennan, I know I have to say it a couple of times. I know you said prior, please don't use the titles, but you know, for the record, I want to be known that I gave you your due because it's much better title than wingman Joel Brennan from my rec league basketball team. Because you're doing a lot more for the state as opposed to chucking up three pointers for our fourth place rec league team. Welcome to the pod, Joel.
Thank you, Max. Shoot to get hot, shoot to stay hot. That's always been my mantra. Yeah.
Absolutely. High volume, I believe is the term.
So Secretary Brennan, I'm sorry. It is part of my my training as a government affairs person, right? I will try to get it out of my jaw, but I have to ask. So this storied basketball league that Mac or team that Mac runs, is it like the team of all of the all-stars in like government, in nonprofit space? Like, how do you get into this team?
Well, first of all, it's all-stars maybe in name only and maybe in our own minds. You know, legends in our own minds is probably one something that's been used before. But also, if there was legendary, I was telling Mac before we got on, you know, I'm no longer a rookie in the over 35. I could be a rookie in an over 50 league.
Don't give him ideas, David. I still need Joel's
playing for him.
I got Joel on a really affordable contract for the next several seasons, so we don't want to lose it. Joel, again, thanks so much for being on the call in the role of, you know, you've been a leader outside of being a great wingman on our basketball team. You've been a tremendous leader that's helped shape Milwaukee to where it is in 2020. And so we'll talk a bit about that. I know you're super modest, so I know you don't like that. But like, as I was digging into your history, it was really remarkable of the journey you've had. And I'm really excited to hear about it, as well as the work that you're doing right now to keep that going for the whole state. But little history. We're an arts and culture pod. Did you know we're the 250th ranked arts and culture pod in the United States? You didn't know that, Joel.
I did not know that.
You're going to get us to 249 with this next anecdote. Tell us a story about a formative arts and cultural experience. You know, it might have been a book, a play. Maybe you created a piece of visual art or a performance. I would love to hear maybe your earliest memory of a formative one and what made it formative for you and how it resonates in your leadership practice today.
All right. I'm not sure if this is going to qualify or not, but my father was a children's book author. And so the formative experience for me was watching my dad as I grew up be a struggling children's book author who I think believed at some point that he was going to be the next Dr. Seuss and was never commercially successful in that. Started his own publishing company.
Wow.
Was like a serial entrepreneur.
Wow.
Some of my earliest memories on the in the arts and culture world were being at Summerfest in the early 1970s. And my dad would set out a table and sell books and t-shirts.
Wow.
And do this throughout the run of Summerfest and State Fair. Wow. So when you talk about the, you know, being informed or kind of understanding about arts and culture, it started at home. My parents were journalists and they were appreciative of the written spoken word. And that lasted a lifetime for them. And I think it's had a big impact on me and on my family and what we've done. So that was the formative impact. Now, you know, that, and then when I was doing like creative writing papers and things like that, my father would edit those things for us when I was a kid. Oftentimes the ending would be different. Like I'd give it to him when I was going to bed, say, hey, could you type this for us or whatever?
Yeah.
And in the end, there would be all kinds of red pen, and that the ending would be materially different than what I gave him. So that's the hazard of that kind of growing up in that experience.
Wow, your dad was like the network punching up the script a little bit. He's like, I don't know if I like this ending as much. And you're like, what? What's going on? I also think the intersection of arts and culture and business too, right? You have this real sense of just sort of how these things come together, watching your father be an entrepreneur. And I think that's one thing that we often share is that small arts and culture groups or individual artists, they are entrepreneurs. They are the mom and pop shops, if you will, of that industry. And so you've had key experiences of that. So we're going to play on that thread in the interview. A little bit too. So that's fun. Also one more bit, you played key roles, Joel, Milwaukee's Redevelopment Authority, Greater Milwaukee Convention and Visitors Bureau. You know, a lot of ampersands. You've been in a lot of orgs with lots of ampersands at the title. And then lately, before this current role, you led Discovery World. So in a lot of ways you had a hand in making sure that Milwaukee has been a vibrant arts and culture city in 2020, right? And throughout these roles, what truths did you hold about the role of arts and culture in Milwaukee, right? As you were sort of seeing these, it's almost like these pieces laid out in front. Were there any patterns or truths that you were holding about arts and culture in our city? And how did it show up in the way you executed your role?
It's really, there's the nexus of arts and culture, education, economic development. And, you know, you see that in Milwaukee and in the role I had at Discovery World, it was kind of the pipeline of people, of young people getting into STEM education. And what does that mean for the future workforce? Mm-hmm. You know, you look at other arts and culture organizations in Milwaukee, most every one of them has at its root, you know, not only the performance art or the product that they do, but also an education mission that they're also trying to accomplish. And to me, that's all about, you know, you're not going to necessarily create actors or performers or people who are doing just that, but you're going to have more well-rounded physicians or people who are in manufacturing or, you know, attorneys or whatever they choose to do. And so to me, it's all about kind of filling the whole person in addition to providing that quality of life and, you know, and what makes a community vibrant and strong and employing a whole bunch of people and having a big economic impact in and of itself. So it's all those things. And I guess I appreciate you giving me at least any bit of credit for it. But to me, just seeing what has happened organically in Milwaukee and, you know, the music scene just erupting over the last decade and, you know, all of the things that have gone into that to making Milwaukee a cool, hip place. You know, it shows I'm old. I don't know that anybody else plays any hip anymore. But doing that is really part of what, you know, what makes a community well-rounded and interesting and vibrant. And, you know, and we've gotten to a certain point there. And then all of a sudden we hit this absolute stop when COVID-19 hit. Mm. And, you know, there's going to have to be a recovery from that. We have to keep people, we have to protect them and save them in the short term, and then we got to grow that and build that and continue to invest in that future.
You know, I think the thing that always pops into mind about that last point, Joel, is that this idea that, like, you know, the performing arts or the arts, right, have been with us since the beginning of time, and so it's going to continue to be with us after, right, whatever this moment is. But I think the question that many of us have, and I'm sure you've heard from many folks too, right, is how vibrant is our infrastructure going to be after, right? Like, especially in this moment of just incredible challenge for arts and culture groups, museums, performing arts organizations, where they can't earn, they can't sell. Right. So I think, you know, to your point about investment, right? I think we continue to wonder, like, how might we sort of as a community continue to tell the story about the importance of investment? Because I think, as you know, Milwaukee County's arts and culture organizations have about $250 million annual spend into the community. And that is not money that just disappears, right? That pays salaries, it puts money into the community that sort of starts generating the engine, right, or a part of the engine that creates the vibrancy in our communities.
Yeah, and I mean, what I can tell you about that infrastructure is I think it was sound going into this. There is nothing that's impenetrable now, though. You know, right. Nationally, people who are in the performing arts or arts and culture overall, you're talking about a third of them having lost their jobs, and in Wisconsin, I've seen, you know, similar numbers so none of that is impenetrable, and we need to, but I think everything that we're doing right now is, and you see this from lots of circles, certainly in the Milwaukee community, but I see it even statewide, is, you know, we're kind of trying to hold things up. And it's not just in the arts and culture community, it's in local government, it's in the healthcare industry, it's in other small businesses, kind of all of those things. There is nothing that we can do except at best kind of tread water for the near term, you know, and save everything that we can. And that's not going to be all of them. But then, you know, and then once we're through that, is what are we going to do long term? You guys have been part of, you know, an effort to try to ensure that Wisconsin is no longer 50th in terms of our investments in the arts. And, you know, and so how do we start to make progress on those things? But in order to get there, we need to navigate our way through, which are, you know, these really troubling, really challenging times right now. Which is why, you know, the governor has made this the short-term $5 million investment to arts culture organizations around the state. Again, not enough, never going to be enough for everything. There's a demand that exceeds that. I'm sure we're going to find that. But we've got to be able to start somewhere. We've got to be able to hold on to as much as what we have in the short term.
That's great. And thank you for the grant program. And I think, you know, we've certainly buried the lead again about not thanking you for putting it out there. And I guess, you know, for some of our listeners who may not be super in tune with state government and everything else, I'm sure they've heard of the Department of Health, they've heard of the Department of Workforce Development. Can you talk just a little bit about the Department of Administration, the agency you run, and why it's so important in this context?
Yeah. So the Department of Administration really has a wide variety of tools that we have and with which we support the governor, all the other departments, and the rest of the administration. We really are the one organization. We're a service organization to all of the other agencies. So we do things around energy. We do things around the state budget. We administer programs related to local units of government. We manage the Capitol Police. We manage the fleet and the infrastructure, the buildings for the state of Wisconsin. So and all of the personnel management across the enterprise. So it's a real wide variety, kind of a grab bag of things. And then as there are issues that come up in any administration issues, you know, we jump in on those. So in this particular instance, when it comes to the COVID-19 response, I mean, this is a public health response, but in doing so, the Department of Health Services is the lead agency on that. And my colleague, Andrea Palma, is doing a terrific job in leading that with her organization. but we're playing a support role in that, whether it's in the procurement aspects of it, making sure that testing supplies get out to the state, whether it's the short-term building projects, like the alternate care facilities, like the one that was built up at State Fair Park in Milwaukee. So it's all of those things that we're providing a supporting role to. And when it comes to the grant program for arts and culture, we're going to be administering that out of our out of the Department of Administration, out of the Division of Enterprise Operations. And really, it's informed by some of the work that's happened in other places around state government. Mm-hmm. Arts Wisconsin, there was a grant program that was able to be done there. But what we have the ability to do, we administer lots of these programs. We administer lots of federal grant programs through the Department of Administration. So we're comfortable with those things. And in terms of the reporting and all those things, it makes it easier. It can be informed by stuff that's gone on in other places. But we have the ability to kind of do the blocking and tackling and hopefully to efficiently get these dollars out on the street. And as you know, with this particular program, with the Arts and Culture Grant, we've got about a 3 week, the month of September is the window in which to apply. Mm-hmm. It's a competitive grant program. So it's not a first come first serve that mm-hmm. people may have heard about through the PPP or other things where, you know, the money is going to go out the door, like as we get applications in. The deadline is I think it's 2:00 on September 30th. Mm-hmm. We will look over the applications, score those, and then that $5 million will be drawn down by the eligible organizations that have applied and the story that they're going to be able to tell, which, you know, you guys can agree with me, is going to be a compelling story in Milwaukee, in every other corner of the state, because these are organizations that have an impact on every local community. Every local community has a little downtown, you know, where you name it, whether that they play a role in it. If it's a performing arts organization, it could be a local museum or other type of facility that has a dramatic impact on the identity and the economic activity in that community.
That's right. And I think, you know, I think sort of reflecting too a little bit about your thought about how about sort of how the Department of Administration sort of plays this coordinating support role for the different departments, it almost feels like too that you know, as we think about arts advocacy, we often think about sort of just the arts of it, as opposed to like how the arts sort of supports public health, how the arts supports education, how the arts supports sort of talent pipelining. And I think you sort of reflecting back to your original thought about like just the vitality of how the arts creates more well-rounded, a more well-rounded citizenry, right? I think that's something that I think we oftentimes forget, that the integrative nature of the arts is such an important value that we sometimes silo, right? Because we're just like, oh, arts, right? As opposed to what the arts' impact more laterally might be. It's really interesting.
Well, and I can tell you, you know, I know you guys are doing work in the city of Milwaukee. I live in the city, and you know, and we all know how important that is to the fabric of the infrastructure there. But this is the same in other parts of the community. There's this entity, Create Portage County in Stevens mm-hmm. Point, which I've become familiar with. Maybe you guys are too, that, you know, it started with a kind of an arts and innovation, you know, background to it. And it is tied very deeply into re-envisioning the whole community and economic development and, you know, and what that means, the Encourage Project in Wisconsin Rapids that I've come to know more about. I mean, these are things that are young people generally who are, you know, part of the creative and innovative fabric of the community, stepping up, standing up and saying, we need to do things differently. We want to attract people here. We want to keep people here. We want to make sure that we grow the kind of place that we think it can be. We're not willing to stand in line and wait for 20 years for people to do that. And, you know, so stepping out into that and into that void and creating something. And I think that's where, you know, so whether it's the Department of Tourism, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, you know, the Department of Administration, all of us need to have some impact and influence on making sure that we're holding up that part of the of Wisconsin, because it's strong, it's vibrant, it's important, and it's at risk at this point.
Yeah. So I heard in that last comment, Joel, how do these different departments step up for arts and culture in a way, right? And integrating it, you know, and seeing it, be it economic development, be it tourism, be it all these other areas. I'm wondering, what's your recommendation on how our listeners, our big loyal listener base, hashtag imaginary friends, can best support our electeds, be it in the administration or other electeds, right, that aren't in the administration, really. How can we support them to be powerful advocates for arts and culture throughout Wisconsin? How do we, in other ways, how do we turn up the heat in a good way?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I think it's about not being bashful. And I think the industry has gotten better organized and gotten more successful at that in recent times. But it's informing and it's educating to make sure that everybody understands that the community, the arts and culture in Wisconsin is a necessary commodity. You hear sometimes about something being nice but not necessary. Mm. That's anything but. If we want to live in a place that's going to continue to grow, where we want to attract, we want to retain talent that we're trying to grow here through our K-12 system, through the UW system, through the private colleges, the technical schools that we have. We want to have a place that is welcoming to those people. That's part of the fabric of making sure that we can get to that point. And, I think you've got to do it with a megaphone. I give a lot of credit. I know it's a little different, but the private venues and what Gary Witt and some of his partners around the state and around the country are doing with a megaphone of making sure that people understand that that's not only those independent venues, but restaurants, hotels, mm-hmm. All the other things that are part of that and the whole arts and culture community, whether it's the private sector doing it or whether it's the nonprofit sector, all can lay some claim to being part of that economic fabric of communities.
That's such a key point that I think people oftentimes forget about, right? And Mac and I talk about this quite a bit, that like this idea that artists and creatives aren't some sort of like magical, like
unicorn,
that just sort of comes out and like does some like magical art stuff, right? But they're actually people who like, in addition to creating paintings in their studios or creating plays or whatever it might be, they also teach our kids, they take care of our seniors, they work in our restaurants, bars, hotels, grocery stores. They do things that make our city run, in addition to making the city and sort of broader community throughout the state vibrant and a place where people want to come and live in, right? And I think that continues to be a story that we continue to try to tell, because I think that helps people sort of feel more connected, right, to the arts and the creative community, rather than thinking about the arts as the museum on the lake, Discovery World, the Rep, the Symphony, is sort of like these institutions that are outside of them, right? But they're actually a part of.
Right, and a place, I mean, not all of us have an eye or a talent towards the creative. So, we can't all step into a role in the Milwaukee Rep or in a small company even, or, and be able to do that. But by the same token, if you see that these people are also doing all these other kind of things that we can envision ourselves doing, it at least puts us in a place where we are, we have commonality, and if we've learned nothing else about our world, it's about me, it's about us, right? So finding a way for us to see someone else who, even if they're doing pretty amazing, spectacular things, that elements of their life are just like mine and just like yours, and our families are doing the same things. I think, and it's a very close-knit group of people too, and I think that's something that I have a very high regard for in terms of the family and the extended family of people who are in the industry as well.
Yeah.
So Joel, you actually beat us to it, because you mentioned the study that puts us at 50th in the country. That's behind American Samoa and Guam, right? These are right. Okay. So yes. I was just taking it again. No shots in American Samoa, but we have no listeners in American Samoa, so they won't get offended. That being said, 13 cents at per capita public spending. I remember I saw you out in the wild, and you actually said, "No, I read that report." So like you anticipate, I was ready to like give you the link. I had a copy in my pocket, ready to give it to you. You read it. I was just, I guess I'm wondering what's your reaction to that number, 13 cents. By the way, Minnesota $7.67, yeah. Iowa $1. What will it take for that thing to get to 26 cents? And again, and I'm not saying that these are promises, right? But I'm just sort of wondering overall. I mean, this is something, and all right, again, I will own that the state can't handle it all, right? Because the state's got a lot of checks to pay for. I get it. But I think I would believe that 13 cents, though, ain't going to cut it, right?
No.
What would be your reaction to that? Or
no, I mean, I agree with you. And I think, you know, you bring up American Samoa, but in that same report, you know, you look at us amongst our regional peers, too. And we're, you mentioned Iowa and Minnesota. Minnesota is kind of the gold standard.
Yeah.
But we're behind every one of those other states. And so, you know.
All the Great Lakes states were lagging, like right. Big Ten, if you wanted a comparison.
Exactly. Right? I mean, if nothing else, you know, I don't think any of us wants to see ourselves as average, but were we to get to average even amongst yeah, right. those Great Lakes or Big Ten states, that would be a significant increase. And and I guess, again, to be as transparent with you as possible, we're in very tough budget times for the state. But I also think, you know, we're at a point where we have to be able to preserve and invest in what our priorities are. Governor Evers has been governor for 19 months. In the 19 years prior to that, you know, the level of spending that we've had on incarceration in the state, as opposed to, you know, investing in the arts and education or other things, I think we have gone kind of, you know, we have had a very different set of priorities than some other states are. You know, I haven't revisited these issues in a while, and I think during the COVID-19, our prison population has actually gone down a little bit because of a number of different factors, but we still have, you know, we have, I think, roughly about three times as many people incarcerated in the state of Wisconsin as they do in our neighboring state in Minnesota. And the costs of doing that are astronomical. We spend over $1 billion, $1.2 billion in our Department of Corrections in our budget. And they have more employees there than anywhere else. So I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent on that issue. But as you look at these issues, they're all related in terms of where are your priorities? What are you going to invest in that's actually better for the long term? And we do a really good job sometimes of scaring people in this country. That, you know, mm-hmm. you have a campaign right now on all sides, you know, that probably there's a little too much about scaring people and not enough offering hope and optimism and opportunity. Yeah. And I think that's part of what the arts and culture are doing as we're looking at how we're going to invest moving forward and where we're going to find some priority. You know, I think finding ways over a period of time to do a little bit more investment there as opposed to, you know, a little bit less retribution is something that mm-hmm. I think most Wisconsinites would say that's a Wisconsin value. That's something mm-hmm. we should all be for. Mm-hmm. But you don't change that stuff overnight. And you also, it gets harder to do in the face of shrinking state revenues yeah. and, you know, huge costs associated with this. So, you know, I think we share those as a priority. The governor mm-hmm. certainly does. It's going to make it harder to do in the near term because we're in triage mode or we're responding to this unprecedented health pandemic.
So I'll sort of file this away, you know, float this out there so that people can hear me saying this and also for you to file this away. That, you know, I think there's also this incredible opportunity right now where we can sort of look for arts and culture groups to partner to deliver cost-effective interventions for state departments or, you know, local government or whatever it might be, right? Because, you know, you had mentioned the declining funding for the arts over the last few administrations at the state level, right? And I think, you know, the one thing that always pops to mind is the Shakespeare program in the, I think it was the Racine jails, where they helped inmates sort of understand sort of get in touch with their internal feelings, right? Through Shakespeare. Incredibly cost-effective, just required a couple of Shakespeare professionals going into the correctional facility to deliver a basically an acting program to folks. And unfortunately that very cost-effective, high outcome program was cut, right? And I wonder, like, are there opportunities, and this is the file away, right, for you, like, are there opportunities for our group statewide, not just us, right, but to be able to partner with the state in helping this rebuild and recovery in a cost-effective way, right? I think it creates, I think, a dual benefit of getting folks to work and also providing a useful benefit to either state government or local government. And I think there's been some interesting work at WEDIC along those lines, the We're All In program. Yep. It's being the arts part is being facilitated through Arts Wisconsin. And I just think there could be ways, new ways, as opposed to, you know, creating an appropriation program, which feels like it might be difficult, but there might be interesting ways to kind of figure out how we sort of establish more effective or deeper public-private partnerships with the arts and culture sector.
Yeah, in some ways that goes back to what Mac was talking about in terms of the voice and being present and being part of the ongoing discourse. It's those kind of creative, we, the state government and local units of government have to be open to that approach, you know, and we need to be able to hold accountable for evidence-based outcomes and all those things. But at the same time, you know, you have the ability and you should be as an industry and as a collection of voices, because you're in every community around the state, to be able to organize in a way that makes sense. But there certainly is a willingness, I think, on the part of the administration, the executive branch, to do that and to try to find some of those creative ways. Again, you know, right now, a lot of what's going on at the state level is very reactive and hopefully responsive to the real challenges that are going on out there, whether it be in rental assistance, you know, economic development programs for small businesses, what we're talking about with the arts and culture grants, aids to local units of government. There are different things that we're doing to try to provide some immediate assistance for people who are really hurting in those places. And that's the immediate, you know, an appropriate response. But we're also putting together a two-year biennial budget that'll spend, you know, tens of billions of dollars. And there needs to be also in there, and the governor will lay out in the coming months what the priorities are and where we're going to continue to invest. And, you know, and even as we're dealing with the short-term trauma and tragedy of what we have going on right now, how are we building a long-term Wisconsin that's a better, stronger place, and a place that you know, all of us are going to want to keep living in, and our kids are going to want to grow up in, and, you know, make even more successful.
So what I'm hearing you say is we need as many arts and culture orgs to complete the grant across the state, right? If not to make your hard life difficult in selecting, but also to reify and remind folks about
absolutely
that's one, right? And two, it's also keep up the drumbeat, if you will, of urgency around this as we move from a reactive to a promotive point at some point, right? We're going to get to a point where we're going to be thinking, what are our priorities? How do we do that? How do we make sure these voices are still activated to remind our electeds and to lift up the voice of how arts and culture is not a nice to have. It's not a muse for the wealthy, but rather it's part of our recovery, because we're going to be fighting. We're trying to mitigate isolation. We're going to try to create more inclusion. We're going to try to figure out our public spaces again, hopefully, and how do we make those vibrant and thrivable, right? And then ultimately it is about how do we keep working on education, you know, in the talent pipeline, where I think creativity and innovation is going to play a big role, arts and culture, that. So it's a bit of like, we gotta flood the zone with apps for that, but then keep the voices going so that, because as you had mentioned, you know, we're not the only voice out there that's trying to get heard. Obviously there's other folks that are you know, that's what their job is to do, that's their role, to try to get heard, but we gotta keep changing that narrative of how arts and culture are what make Wisconsin what it is, the unique identity that it has.
And no matter what, in the realm of the performing arts, it's the one of the first to close and the last to open. You know, in this particular case, doing the responsible thing by the companies, by the cast and the employees there, and by the audience, doing the responsible thing is going to hurt those places more than anything. And I think at a time where, everybody has a need and they're trying to articulate that, making sure that there's an understanding that is particularly prevalent there and that it's gonna be longer standing. I mean, it's interesting for me, I've observed this to a number of people back at Discovery World. You know, we relied more heavily on a relative basis on the gate and on earned revenue than some of the other organizations. And, you know, I always held that up as, something that was a real badge of honor and something we were proud of, but also something that, hey, times may get tough, but people still have their 15 bucks or whatever, they're still going to come and you can still generate that earned revenue. It's less responsive to the kind of the whims of if the economy goes down in a heartbeat, you may get fewer fewer contributed dollars. But if you always have that ability to generate revenue through the gate, then you're going to be in okay shape. Well, we found a time where, you know, having the ability to earn revenue is really a challenge. It's not as easy because this is the type of disease that if you're in a congregate setting, if you're trying to put butts in seats somewhere, you're hurt. You have an outsized problem as opposed to those places that as the stock market continues with blips here and there, it continues to go along pretty well. Donors are still making their contributions to a large extent. It's the people who are trying to earn revenue that are really, you know, they're challenged more than anybody else in this. So it's something that I think, you know, that policymakers and decision makers at the public level have to take those things into account when we're thinking about, you know, how do we navigate our way out of this too?
It's like we can't penalize people for doing the right thing, right? I mean, to your point, it's like if you're trying to be responsible and keeping people safe, your workforce safe, your audience members safe, how do you balance that? And God, like, you know, I'm so lucky that we're an arts organization that doesn't have to worry about that, right? Like, we don't have to put on a play, we don't have to sell tickets. Our challenge has been like, how do we hold meetings, right? And like, thank God Zoom is a terrible approximation for our meetings, but at least we can still do it.
In every case, and this is for any arts organization, it's that they're like any business also. They evolve, they adapt very quickly to what their audience needs, but that takes an audience, right? I mean, you can adapt to any situation as long as you have the core of what you need, which is audience. And we're in a position where you can't have the only core function that you need. We can, you know, there are the creative community and the innovations there abound, and they could do a thousand things to make sure that people, but you just need to have people there. And that's the one thing we haven't been able to do. And, you know, so that's why we need to continually find ways to navigate our way through these really challenging times and get to a point where they can then exercise and, you know, do those really creative things once they get that audience back. And once we're conditioned as people who love that stuff to go back there, because that's the other side of this is, you know, those of us who want to be responsible are also, you know, less likely to take in a ball game, go to a show, go to a concert, whatever, you know. I mean, everybody has seen those stats, and I think we're all finding that you're going to have to be ready, the community is going to have to be ready, and the customers are going to have to be ready at the same time.
Well, Secretary Brennan, I'm saying that because I'm shifting back to normal life pretty soon. I am in great appreciation, not just for the time you took time to visit with us today, but overall, the for you to also just clarify again for us, again, the priorities of the admin and how I hate to use war as a narrative, or like fires or something, but it's like you're putting out a lot at once. Like I said, triage, right? But I do think it's important to have this investment, this $5 million investment. And we can also hold at the same time, we can also both say, we got to do more, right? And I think our charge is from this call, I did it again, David, from this podcast, right? Is to want to implore our listeners, if you've got an arts org that qualifies, please apply. Right. To be seen. Right. And so that we can build, you know, again, reify the urgency about this, but two, making sure our listeners and our listeners, right. Keep pressing on our electeds, right. Keep sending them a note. Joel, I don't know if you knew this, but like since June, since when David wore a tan suit, that was on the cover of JS Online, it was hilariously awful that the whole article was about everything we talked about, but David smiling, wearing a tan suit, looking like he was Sure West's big seller in real estate. So thank you, JS Online, for like mixed messages. But since then, we got 1,600 pieces of communication from our network to electeds, right? And so that's what we're talking about, keeping that on so that it reminds folks that this matters, reminds electeds and others that this matters. That's the charge from this. Usually we do plugs, Joel, but people can find you in the government. They can find you. But I am curious, when you do get downtime, or maybe you're looking forward to this, what are the arts and culture experiences in Wisconsin that you're either looking forward to going back to or that you get to be inspired by because you found a way to engage? This is an arts and culture podcast after all, Joel. What inspires you, or what's something that you wish wasn't such a best kept secret? in the
law? I mean, I think the state is replete with those things. You know, from our personal standpoint, my wife and I have been season ticket holders at the Rep for probably 15 years almost, and our kids are 13 and 14. So, you know, it dates back to the pre-kid times. But it's our next door neighbors, and we live close to downtown, our next door neighbors, and we go have dinner, we go to a show. I mean, it is, and we live 5 minutes from there. So it's the ultimate reason to live in the city, is the access to everything that we have, and, you know, and the richness of that in Milwaukee. I can just think of some of my kids' best experiences. My mother passed away 7 years ago now, and but my daughter got to go see the Nutcracker with her, and the year before my mother passed away, and just those types of experiences. And that's in the, you know, those are the larger venues. There are enough neighborhood venues. There are things that are happening in communities and neighborhoods across Milwaukee that are just kind of growing up that I appreciate and I embrace as somebody who's a city resident and wants the city to do well. And so, you know, all of those things add to the richness, the vitality of the city. And I, those are the things I want to do personally when this is all over with. But I told you, I got to go see a program that's happening in Stevens Point. I've done work in Wisconsin Rapids. There's plenty, you know, I happen to be in Madison today in Dane County in the northeastern part of the state. And everywhere there's richness, and there are small towns in which the arts and cultural community is part of the backbone and part of reinventing what that community wants to be. So, you know, it's not only for what I want personally and what I want to do in my downtime, it's what we need to do as a state that we need to kind of get back to. And that's what I'm looking forward to. And I know you don't want to give me a plug, but can I just give one plug for the people who are listening? You know, go to the Wisconsin, the DOA page. It's in our We're All In under that moniker. It has all the programs and people can get all the application materials. There was a webinar we did last week that a couple hundred people and organizations from around the state looked at. The applications are due on September 30th. You can withdraw your application if people have already applied and they think, oh, I could make it better, or there's other supporting material. You can withdraw it, resubmit it right up until the 30th. As I said, this is not like we're taking it in and it's a first come, first serve. We're gonna wait till September 30th, look at all of the applications that come in. And I do hope that there is a demand that exceeds the money that we have. And the other thing that I guess the last point I'd leave you with is none of this happens in a static environment. This is all very dynamic. Things are changing. The resources that we have through the CARES Act all have to be spent by December 30th. And so, you know, if we get demand in excess of that $5 million and we find that there's another program that maybe hasn't spent that, or there's other resources that get freed up, if we've efficiently been able to do that and there's a demand that exceeds, you know, there's nothing to say that as we go through, we can, you know, look at other ways of being able to reinvest that money. Yeah. And, you know, there's always the potential that the people at the federal level will get their act together and invest more money, because that's necessary. You know, we cannot, at the state level, we cannot take on debt. We're not like the federal government. And it's the same with 50 states. So this is a time where the federal government has to step up to the plate and support us. And, you know, so there are individual pieces of legislation that can happen. There's another version of, you know, kind of what the next CARES Act might look like. People ought to not only be reaching out to their state legislators, but holding the feet to the fire of those federal legislators to act on their behalf, because it's you know, there is still a need out there. That need isn't going away on December 31st of this year. And the recovery is going to take a lot longer than that.
Can we have you on the show every week?
Yeah, every week. We get Joel every week. Secretary Brennan, it was a pleasure. And thanks so much for doing the work that you do, like you said, and keeping the state afloat, given obviously we're here for arts and culture, but like you said, there are so many elements that is trying to make it through this tough time. And I think I'm very confident that we will make it through and get to that point of proactivity. The other thing I also want you to know is I really need your knee to heal up, because the league's going to start again and we're counting on you for 16-8. I got you penciled for 16-8. I need you to generate those.
16 shots and 8 turnovers. Maybe,
that's right. That, well, We'll talk about that later. Thanks so much.
David Mack, thanks. I appreciate it.
Mac, first rule of Pod Club, always let a cabinet level secretary plug whatever they want.
You know, I was rushing.
Second rule of Pod Club.
I was rushing.
Always let a cabinet level secretary plug whatever they want.
If I would have done it over, I'd been like, Secretary Brennan, anything you want to plug, right? I want to let you know my mindset. I'm not saying it was correct, but I was like, we are 5 minutes over. So I'm sweating a little bit because I hate that he's late or don't want to be late. And then two, I think I have a vibe that plugs are beneath people. Like I thought he would bring on a lackey to plug, like just send us a lackey to plug or something. But, so you're right. You're right. I should have been like, because he had a great plug. He plugged well.
What a great guest though. I mean, he was, I was only half joking about having him on every week. I mean, he was such a, I feel like he basically did our job for us, right? Like being able to talk about how important the role of arts and culture is to our city, region, and state in the depth, right? That he was able to connect with that, I think was so great. And I think to your point a little earlier, I think his many, many years at Discovery World obviously informed and also Visit, right? Also informed that ability and that I think very deep understanding of the role arts and culture plays in our community.
I mean, we were talking, you know, David, in your government relations life, you meet a lot of folks in his role, right? And I would probably guess that he's a little more rarer than people that occupy that role who have a really intimate knowledge of the intersection of arts and culture and the realities of running a shop, right? And depending on gate and managing vendors and managing visiting artists, like he gets that. And like I said, I know him as Joel, the really, you know, really down to earth wingman, you know? So like, I already come, like, I get that you don't get to his role without being excellent in navigating difficult situations and solving difficult problems. And I can recognize, I appreciate that he was advocating for it, but I also know there's a limit to him to advocate given his role, right? And I think even that being said, I find him very genuine in saying that he sees arts and culture like, he said, it's like air, it's like water, right? It's not something we should question, right? This is something we need to prioritize. And again, you know, he won't say it, I will. Like when you look at the charts with show funding, there's a certain year where we see the bottom fall off, right? And we know what happened collectively in Wisconsin with priority shifting. So I think it's fair to say it took a while, you know, for that to, you know, it took a while for the effects of that. And we're gonna have to take some time to build that back. And I think he's both saying urgency, keep pressing, but also patience at the same time, because these are tough times to be running a state government.
Yeah, you know, and I think to your point, like the divestment of funding from the arts didn't happen overnight. It happened over time, and similarly, to rebuild that investment in the arts in our state is also going to take time. But we're not going to be able to bridge that getting to our end result, which is, you know, getting out of 50th in the nation in public funding for the arts, without continual, constant, strong advocacy that that hopefully our listeners, we know many of them have engaged in already, as you said, over 1600 messages since May, but we're going to need to turn out 1600 more messages, you know, in the next few weeks, right? In order to I think, on the one hand, thank our governor and state elected officials, and also continue to urge them that they can do more and that there is still need out there. But then also the corollary point too is that we have to continue the pressure on our federal elected officials, because to Secretary Brennan's point, I mean, the feds can run a deficit and a debt, whereas state and local governments can't. Also, you know who can't? Our arts organizations, right? Like, so So it is just so important for us to keep the pressure on both our state elected officials, but also our federal elected officials, because they need to pass something by the end of the federal fiscal year, which is the end of September.
Which is 17 days away of us recording this podcast, right?
So. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, far be it for me to say anything controversial on this, but I think the U.S. Senate needs to figure out how to put aside partisan differences and do the right thing by the country.
You know who's doing the right thing?
Our listeners, as usual.
As usual. Thanks, listeners, for sticking us out, being with us, enduring it. You didn't know Dave was away. That's why the weather was weird. He left. He left our system for a little bit to take care of himself and watch movies. He actually went to a theater and watched movies.
It was an interesting experience. I highly recommend it for people.
Hopefully in the near future, because I'd like to go back to a movie, quite candidly. Also, want to share, since we last talked, I really appreciated watching Stew of the Milwaukee Black Theater Festival, which was just completed its run, and so excited for it, not just for the amazing programming that took place, thanks to the Milwaukee Chamber Theater for holding it, as well as the curation team of Black artists and creatives that have helped deliver it, make it happen. So it was great watching that and seeing that performance, but also grateful for the webinar that Milwaukee Rep hosted, 2020 Vision for the Arts, that May Andralis talked about, and got to see that. So wanted to acknowledge that as well. And I'm hopeful for that to come back next year, and hopefully in person. So that's something I'm also grateful for. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for our listeners. And what would really help is not just writing those letters and those emails at imaginemke.org to your elected reps, but also to rate the pod 5 stars and get the word out, because it helps people find us. And if you have other thoughts about the podcast, email them to us at pod@imaginemke.org, pod@imaginemke.org.
Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_mke or Facebook at @imaginemke. Again, mention the pod on social media, and we will make you a #imaginaryfriendmke, not only the imaginary friend, but imaginary friend MKE. Make sure you listen to our sister and brother podcasts, Arts Forward MKE, hosted by Lindsay Sheridan. New episode comes out this Thursday, and Black Imagination with Kenita Hickman and Antoine Carter. New episode out this Wednesday. You won't want to miss them. And please, please, please do take action at our website, www.imaginemke.org/act.
Until then, I hope you have a lovely week, and we look forward to catching up with you next Tuesday with old friend Christine Fleming from the Haggerty Museum.
Okay. I don't need to be in, I don't stand on titles. I hope you guys don't either. I'll just call you guys David and Mac, if that's all right.
Actually, I want to be known as the round mound of rebound, Joel. That's
less round.
Less round than you want. Round mound. That's awesome.